CliffCentral.com.
Yes, indeed. Collectomania every Monday. You don't want to miss out on that. And we've got fantastic collections, all kinds of people all over the place collecting very, very cool things. This week we spoke about the dark side of collecting. Yes, there is a dark side to collecting. People who trade in foreign antiquities, people who trade illegally in gold, all kinds of things. You can listen to that episode. Just go along and grab the podcast, as you would for anything else, on cliffcentral.com. The podcasts are all there. Okay, so a couple of things to get to this morning. One or two of them on Simpiwe's agenda. First of all, apparently KFC in Australia will be swapping lettuce for cabbage, as there is a shortage of lettuce. So imagine you ordered your hamburger. Instead of lettuce, they gave you cabbage. I think I would throw it right back at them. I mean,
it's not the same thing.
McDonald's is bad enough, right? It's bad enough, but now you're going to put cabbage on because you can't find lettuce? Blech.
Why don't they just replace the chicken for beef?
Yeah, exactly. It's the same thing, right?
No.
There's a shortage going on.
Because it looks similar.
So then rather leave off the lettuce, right?
Yeah. You don't replace bananas with pickles.
Oh, you guys. Like, you guys haven't even tried this and you're already just like, no. I think, you know, they're trying to, you know, make a plan when, you know, lettuce is in shortage, and cabbage isn't that bad when it's raw, right? I think maybe, and you might enjoy it with a wrap or a burger that you get from KFC. And besides, why are you buying a burger at KFC? Let's start there. I think that's your first mistake. Don't do that in general. Just in general, don't do that. And if you are, then don't be mad that they're putting cabbage. I don't think you can be mad.
All right, can I ask you a serious question? Since you brought this up, Simpiwe.
Yes.
Let's rank the burgers and you can get at fast food places in South Africa, because it's important.
I'm in. Right. I love this.
All right, so let's okay. First, what are the categories? So we got, let's just stick to ordinary hamburgers. We're not going to go into chicken burgers or anything else. So let's go. We've got Burger King, we've got Steers, we've got
Rockamamas,
we've got McDonald's. Let's have one more just to round it off.
Chicken Licken.
No, we're gonna stay.
Ah, why are you buying a burger at Chicken Licken?
Yeah. Okay. Fair point.
All right. So, what else? Wimpy. Let's say Wimpy is the fifth one, right? So, okay. Wimpy, Steers, Burger King, McDonald's, and Rockamamas. All right. So, line them up. What do you go? What's your ranking?
Rockamamas.
Number one.
Right at the top.
Yes.
Yeah. Non-negotiable.
All right. Okay.
Come on now.
All right.
I would then go with Steers as a solid second. Their burgers and fries are actually really, really good. And the fact that it's a Wednesday, wacky Wednesday, I'm sorry, they have my heart. So I'm a bit biased.
You think a Steers burger is nicer than Burger King?
Yeah. Like, I'm not a fan of Burger King. Like,
you're
it's
not
gonna be done
much on a Steers burger compared to Burger King. Burger King is giving you the lettuce, the tomato, the pickles. Steers isn't doing much.
No, Steers, as I said, I'm a bit biased. There's a Wacky Wednesday and the fries are solid. Like, they
Wacky Wednesday, I understand. That is a value for money.
They got me. I haven't had a Spur burger in like forever, so that's also gonna be at the bottom. Let's go. We have McDonald's, right?
McDonald's, yeah.
Solid thing. Once upon a time, like, the Big Macs was the ish. Like,
Big Mac
now,
plus. I like it.
All right.
I don't know, but once upon a time they were right there. Definitely. I would then put Burger King at number four and then Wimpy at number five, because I haven't had Wimpy in years. So I don't know.
I can remember the last
top five.
I can remember the last time I had a Wimpy. It was at the airport, because they've
always.
Right. The only place you'd stop for, like, I'm never going to go and buy a Wimpy just because. But if I'm at the airport, that's the only place it's open, and you go to it because that's what you're going to have. And so what do you order? Well, it's Wimpy. Okay, I'll go for a Wimpy burger. But otherwise, I couldn't be bothered about them. All right, so
Wimpy, you have to eat there, because in transit, the burger goes soggy for some reason.
Ew. No, you go. No.
I never thought of actually, like, drive-through Wimpy. Yeah.
Apparently, apparently McDonald's burgers you can keep for years, and they stay. They look exactly the same after like five. Yes, there's an actual. There's a
website.
Yeah, we did. We actually
in
kept.
In studio, we did that.
We kept one of those little hamburgers of theirs. We kept it under a glass covering for I don't know, 4 or 5 years, in fact. And it still looked exactly the same. And we eventually decided we've got to get rid of it. It becomes like a health hazard eventually. But it looked exactly the same when we threw it away after about 4 years. So, all right, Flax, you get to rank yours. Go.
Okay, so coming in at number one, Rocamamas. Non-negotiable. They, even their backstory, I remember, Gareth, you had the founder on your show once, and he was like the coolest dude.
Yeah, Mike Sharman used to do their ads for them once.
Yeah.
When they had good ads, yeah.
So Rocamamas at the top. For some reason, guys, I like Burger King. There's something about their onions that and their pickles that they use and the mayo that they use that hits the spot for me.
All right, okay.
After Burger King, I'm going McDonald's, then KFC, then Wimpy.
Yeah, KFC wasn't on the list, but all right. I mean, that's fine. You threw. I don't think
you clearly like KFC.
Yeah, but you like KFC. It's funny. So we all put Wimpy at the bottom, huh? Because I'd do the same. I don't know. I Rocamamas, I haven't had enough of their burgers. I've maybe had one once and I can't remember it. But I'll take you two and your word on that.
So good.
I don't know. So EP47 says, my cousin is the financial director of the Spur Group. Support Spur, Rocamamas, and Panarottis. Okay, yeah. Well, we don't have to, but you know, we're gonna rank.
You can send us. If you want to send us.
No. Not at this time in the morning. Plus, we should be looking after our health. Gary says, Flax, have you eaten that Carolina Reaper burger that they have at Rocamamas?
No, I don't engage in those sort of activities. Eh? You're paying for it for the next 3 days. It's not just in the moment, let me tell you.
See, now we've started a whole thing here. And Dogozo says, Steers patty is nice, but it comes with too much sauce. A Burger King burger with a Steers patty would be nice. You see, he's swapping different things from different ones.
But that's too much admin. That's way too much admin. So, but you need to know your fighters. Mm-hmm.
The foundation of corruption started at the salad bar at a Spur because I've never hidden things so well and deceived people in my life. Like, no, I didn't go to the salad bar, yet I'm sitting with a mountain of free salad.
Oh, wow. You used to go and take when you hadn't ordered the salad valley. That's terrible, Flax. That's terrible.
I used to go back and get seconds at the salad bar and deny it. No, this is still the first plate.
Well, listen, I do think that this is pretty funny. A lot of people saying with that KFC cabbage instead of lettuce situation that they've got going on in Australia. Parallel Parking says cabbage burger equals a fart burger. And then Propaganda is saying methane is already a problem. What now, cabbage? Yeah. Propaganda also says Joe Burgers rock. All right. Yeah. Rocamamas, yum. Steers okay. Wimpy okay. McDonald's, cardboard. That's from Sweet Pea.
Steers is ranking up high, eh?
It's not doing too bad.
They've gone down over the years. Their chips, 100% the best.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Yes. Steers chips. If you're I would sometimes prefer to make the burgers myself, but then buy Steers chips, you know? Because you can't get
And you go to that front thing and you just squirt half a tub of the pink sauce, then half a tub of the barbecue, and you're trying to find your chips now because they're swimming and they're drowning.
Sis, man.
And the
What's
fork
wrong
in
with
your hands. I love it.
It's gross.
Oh, so disgusting. That's a bit too much sauce. But I remember in Machuk, my friends and I, there was fish and chips that was close to our school. So after school, we'd go there. And we are the reason why they removed the sauces, because you could just go there and And that's what we did. We would add half the bottle in our large chips, from the tomato, mustard. And it was just and then they removed the sauces. They're like, no, you guys waste our sauces.
Do you guys remember, and this is a flashback, do you remember the restaurant called Something Fishy?
Yeah, I remember.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Jeez. What happened to that?
They're still around.
Really?
Yeah, there's some of them.
Yeah.
I've seen one.
There's one or two.
Yeah.
There's still one in Boxburg, I mean.
Boxburg. Look, apparently, so Neil says that Rocamamas in Bedford View, they did a burger called the Bedford Bomb. You need to sign a consent form before eating it. It's so fucking hot. That's amazing. That's very cool.
I would die. No, I can't stomach anything too spicy. Like, I think Zinger wings are spicy. So,
See, now we've got into talking about food, which is the worst thing you want to do first thing in the morning. Because you just think about food. Now. And you're going to, I can guarantee you a whole lot of us will be making bad food decisions after the show this morning because of this discussion. All right, but while we're on it, we may as well go in for a penny, in for a pound, right? So, let's rank the chips. We said we were going to rank the burgers, but now let's rank the chips. So, again, let's go to this list. All right, you ready? Rockamama, Steers, Spur, Wimpy, McDonald's. Those are the five. We're not going to go more than five.
Rank McDonald's at the top. Number five.
Top.
McDonald's number five.
As the worst.
Yes.
Okay.
Joking. Very adamant.
You can only enjoy McDonald's fries when they're hot. The minute they're cold. Yeah. Bruv, what's going on?
Yeah, it's disgusting when they're cold.
That's why you eat them in the car.
No. But the mere fact that you also have to eat them quick and in a hurry is problematic. So no, that's number five. Let's be honest, Jax.
Logistical issue.
Okay, keep going.
Number one, Steers. Easily, all day, every day, guys. Steers is bomb.com. Rockamamas is not bad. And they do the skinny fries, similar
ones.
To make... Mm-hmm. Yeah.
With the cheesy sauce.
Mm-hmm.
Dude.
I'm like finishing your words. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I'm just like, yo. Okay. Yeah. So, Rockamamas, definitely. Who else is there? I haven't had Wimpy in forever. So, Wimpy would be number four. And then number three would be Burger King. There we go.
Wimpy, you know you've been to Wimpy if you've got like mustard stained fingers. Like, that doesn't come off. Even with Terps, it doesn't come off.
You know what? I just want to close off this conversation, because for people who don't care about this stuff, it must be really boring. And I'm maybe one of those people. I'm not a big fast food guy, but I do not like chips with sauce on them. I don't like tomato sauce.
Really?
No. It's fair. Listen, again, Steers, you don't need them because they've got that nice seasoning on them. McDonald's, you don't need to add anything to that. Wimpy's chips are boring, so I'd put them at the bottom. Maybe you need to add some tomato sauce or something to that. But really? Now, Gary says he can feel his cholesterol rising just listening to this. Yeah, it's true.
Yeah. Gareth, will you not have like chip and dip?
No, dude. Not my thing. Don't like it.
Interesting.
Henko says, best chips come from any corner store in South Africa. They're wrapped in newspapers, smell like vinegar and paper. Hands the fuck down. Yeah, absolutely. Slop chips, dude.
Let me tell you.
Those are the best.
With vinegar.
The store also needs to look a bit dodgy.
Yeah, it needs to be grimy. It needs to be grimy and gross. Mm. Yeah.
Yes.
Jesus.
Yes. Then you know you're getting
chips,
the Rio Makoya.
I'm with you.
It's going to be so delicious. There's this sauce, this thing that you can't explain. And you're just like...
Years of foundation.
Oil that's been used 500 times.
Pre-COVID oil.
No, I tell you what.
That's the place you need to get food from.
You are so right. Henku, that is spot on. Like proper corner store South African slop chips. And as Simpiwe says, it's got to come from like some dodgy guy who's cooking them in a fryer that hasn't been cleaned for 4 years. Somehow they just work. They just work.
It just slaps differently.
It does.
And you can't pinpoint it. You can't be like, I don't know why I keep coming back, but there's something about this place that just, not only that thing, it's just so juicy, so nuts.
I love how that we really hit a nerve here with Simpiwe. I got something to say.
You lit up, eh?
I got something to say. That's great. Oh, man. I remember I went to a place in Cape Town after a night out with Randall when we went out after Idols one night. And we went to a place called the Golden Dish, which is in, I think it's in Athlone. And the Golden Dish serves a thing called the Bastard, which is like it's a rachmaker in Afrikaans. It gets you right after a night of big drinking. But it's unbelievable. And that place, I don't think you can't replicate something like that. You can't build a chain of them. There's only one, you know?
Wait, is it a burger, pizza?
Oh, dude, everything. They make everything there, but they make like these unbelievable like quadruple-decker sandwiches and things, and it'll sort you out. Whatever you need,
like
they'll make
Dagwood.
It. That's it, like that. It's amazing. Ooh. Anyway, slop chips, according to Inga, need to be brown from blended vinegar. You need to cough just breathing near it.
Okay.
I just just got like a whiff of vinegar in my nose right now.
Carl says, my dad owned a fish and chip store. It was lekker, but fuck, we were poor. Yeah, listen.
Oh.
It's hard work, hey, running one of those shops. But man, it's a lot of Portuguese guys who used to run those little corner stores. Portuguese and Greek guys used to run those corner stores. Sanele says, there's nothing like an Athlone Gatsby. You see, the Gatsby, that's another one. Very, very good. Those shops also had a pinball machine in them, the best. Yes, Steve, you're going back a long time now.
Next minute, slot
like when you'd save up money as you're waiting to play the games with your friends, yeah. And you're just like, smart turn, wait. Oh my gosh. Okay, now I feel old. Thanks for that.
Yeah, Neil points out also, I don't know why we're stuck on this food thing this hour, but let's go there if that's where we're headed. Not a big chippy guy, but all chips need to be eaten hot. Rocco winning again. Yeah, you can't have, like, chips are one of those things that you can't warm up in the microwave. No matter what you try to do, after they've been cooked, they're done. You can't make them again. You know, you can't make them changes. Nice again.
There's no return. There is no, like, I fully understand what you say about McDonald's chips. Once they go cold, there's no return. They're inedible. What? Inedible?
Yeah. Inedible, correct.
Okay.
Spot
inedible.
On. Yeah, that's exactly the right word.
It was a tongue twister and a half.
No, it's amazing though. Like sometimes when you wake up after a big night out or whatever, there's just some fast food that appeals to you more than anything else. And I remember there used to be a Fontana chicken in they used to make the best chicken, and you could get that at like 2 a.m, 3 a.m. They were open all night long. There was one in the Morningside shops before they redid them, and there was one on Grayston Drive. But apparently, the original Fontana chicken was in town. In like the middle of Joburg. And those guys, they used to have those rotisserie chickens. You know those ones?
Ooh,
but like lots of those. And man, let me tell you something. If you were hungover or you were still drunk from the night before, that was the thing to eat. You could not get better than that as hangover food. You could fantasize about that stuff. You'd lie in bed. You wouldn't be able to move, but you'd be thinking about Fontana chicken.
Chicken with good spice is like cozy food.
Amazing, amazing, amazing.
This is why off chicken licking when you're a bit hanging. Chicken licking wings.
Oh, no.
And you must
Sharon,
dip that sauce
extra
spicy.
This was bound to come up. So Sharon's brought up the fucking air fryer. This is about the 20th time in the last 2 weeks that someone's brought up an air fryer. People are obsessed with these air fryers. Do you have one, Flax?
100%. They're genius inventions. I don't know who came up with it. Genius.
I knew you'd have one.
There's nothing it doesn't do. It makes popcorn. You could probably make eggs in there. You could, I don't know, you can do everything in an air fryer. My latest thing is a pressure cooker, but the advanced ones, the ones that aren't going to explode. Like you can make a stew in like 2 hours and it's like as if it's slow roasted for a day. Genius.
Roasted?
Yes.
I don't know anything about cooking.
I mean, not roasted.
A slow cooker is what you should get. I haven't been really moved by the air fryer love. Like, I'm just why can you do everything in one thing? Like, that's a bit sketchy. But the slow cooker,
are obsessed with this air fryer. It's all they're talking about. I'm going to ban air fryers as a subject of discussion.
Do you not have one?
No. I wouldn't know what to do with it.
Gadgets and gizmos do you have in your kitchen that you enjoy?
I'm useless at cooking. Useless. You know me. I can't cook to save my life.
I think you should ask Jared, how many pots does he have? Like, I think that's how old school he is.
maybe about 4, 5?
In the whole house?
Yeah.
No.
I don't have a lot of pots. what am I going to do with them?
Hectic.
How do you cook? I'm presuming you have a fryer, a pan fryer.
Frying pan, yeah.
Do you have like a big one at least for like stews?
Cast iron.
I've got a pot. I've got a pot that I make soup in. Does that count?
Okay. No, it's not that big, but okay.
We'll take it.
It's huge. Yeah. It's a massive big cauldron thing, yeah?
Do you have a zhuzha though for the soup, like the mula?
What?
I think it's called a mula.
Zhuzha, no. No, I don't use one of those. I cut things up with a knife.
Okay, this is like the dark ages. Okay,
guys, you have a stove, eh?
I don't even want to talk. I'm embarrassed. I don't know how to cook anything. I don't know what pots I have or what pots I need. I don't care about this stuff at all. I'm useless in the kitchen, promise you. There's nothing. I'm not making casseroles or fancy stews or, I mean, I can fry a steak. I can cook eggs. I can cook bacon. I can do stew. I can do soup. I can do basic stuff. So I can do that. But the rest, what do I need all this shit for? Please. What for?
You are the target market for an air fryer.
Maybe. That's why I'm avoiding it.
I think so.
Snaye says 5 pots is enough for someone who lives alone. I love cooking and I have 5 or 6 pots. See? Jared says, okay. Air fryers are idiot-proof. Throw some meat and veg in, flip and stir once. 10 minutes later, you have a meal. See, this is the... I'm telling you, this is like a religion, this air fryer thing. It's crazy.
Someone's going to be like, in 10 years' time, oh, yes, now we're going to learn in class today about the man who invented the air fryer.
Yeah, I'm telling you. It's going to become
like... We don't care about Thomas Edison anymore.
It's already like a religion. You see these people who have their air fryers. They're like, oh, let me tell you about the air fryer. It came up the other day with a bunch of friends. We were all talking. Lebang as well. Yeah. No, Lebang's a big fan of the air fryer. But it's been on the show like 10 times. And then it even came up in conversation in person with some friends the other day. And I was like, no, I'm not having this air fryer conversation again. Please. It's enough already. So let's move on. Flax, you are turning 30 soon. Are you nervous about this?
I'm not ready. It's like, I'm not, I like 20s. I like even saying 20s or 20. And like 30 is like the amount of weird paperwork you start getting when you turn older. It's ridiculous.
What are you talking about?
Words don't make sense to me, yet they presented to me.
What paperwork?
Like
who's giving
investments you? And like opening up, getting a private banker now. I'm like, previously I was just transferring funds from accounts to accounts. Like, now I need to sign this paperwork and chat to you about this money market account. I don't want to do that.
Oh, that's brilliant. So you're nervous about this, are you?
It just doesn't make sense to me. Like, there wasn't a smooth transition into this level of living, like where I have to know this sort of things. Like, it seems like just yesterday my mom bought me an air fryer. Like,
your mom bought you an air fryer. I knew that you couldn't have gone. I knew you didn't go out and buy that yourself.
Like, when did we start getting presented with like really grown up things?
Well,
like, banks start talking to you in different languages. No, I'm not enjoying it. It's too much.
No, but aren't you like excited? No, like, I know that like as I've gotten a bit older, like there's certain things that are really like. Catching my eye now that I didn't think would before.
Like I
look at Tupperware now and I'm like, I see why my gran was overprotective of this, and I understand because this thing is expensive, but you need it, you know? And you get excited for certain, like, okay, not an air fryer, but like I have an ice cream maker, so I'm excited.
Ooh, that's cool. I want to take Tupperware and string tie the lid to the base so they never lose each other.
Yeah, guys,
we're back. Suddenly we're back on food. It's just, what is going on? Are you too hungry this morning? Is there something that you want to tell me?
No, can I just get this off my chest?
Go on.
When you wash a Tupperware dish that has a lid, when you're done washing it and you've dried it, please put the lid and the dish together. I don't understand how people will place like the dish somewhere else, the lid somewhere else, and then the day I need it, I can't find the freaking lid for the right Tupperware. Now I'm just going crazy and I'm just like, where the hell's the lid? Where is this lid?
Yeah. No, they should be
aware. Doesn't have anything else.
I think they've tried though to color code these things. Like when you buy them, then the lid has a color on it that the base also has. But it doesn't work, right? This is proof that you guys are getting old. This is proof that you're getting old. When your Tupperware conversations, this just shows the old Michael Flax in Simpium Tetua would never have even broached a subject on Tupperwares. This is, guys, you are officially old. Congratulations.
I wish we didn't have to go through these sort of struggles with the Tupperware. Like, Why can't just a lid be there for every base? It goes, they both go into the same dishwasher, but come out at separate occasions.
See, I wouldn't know because they don't have a dishwasher.
I think yeah, I might move over to Gareth's way of living. This causes me anxiety and frustration in some ways.
All right. So listen, we've got to talk to someone who I've been really excited to bring onto the show for a very long time. His name is Ira Shinsky. He is a dynamic security professional. He's got over 25 years in law enforcement experience, in executive protection, in crisis management, in physical security investigations, airline and airport security, event security, fire safety, travel security, course instruction, and a whole lot more. He started off his career at the United States Department of State, the Bureau for Diplomatic Security, where he was responsible for all aspects of protecting the United States UN ambassadors. He protected Madeleine Albright, Will Richardson, Richard Holbrooke. He spent 2 years at the embassy in Caracas in Venezuela, which must have been fascinating. Then he left the Department of State and he joined the Federal Air Marshal Service in the Department of Homeland Security. So he knows all about how that works, what goes on at airports, what kind of things they're looking for, and that he held for over a decade. Since leaving that, he's been a security consultant for several Fortune 500 companies and high wealth clients, what they call high net individuals. And he's with us this morning. Ira, it's so good to see you. How are you?
Hi, Gareth. How are you? Nice to see you again.
Yeah, great.
It's been a few months.
Great to see you, Ira. Listen, you've got an incredible CV. We were just talking about all the things you've done before. And it's absolutely mind-blowing the kind of experience that you've had in security. You must be very much in demand. You must be very busy all the time in New York.
It's been very busy, and you know, I work a lot in New York, but I also travel a lot. Obviously, when I met you, I was in Mexico.
Yeah.
I'm going off to Spain in August, and it's been a good run. You know, I didn't think after I retired 8 years ago that I would be in the field running around like I am, but as I said, I'm really enjoying it. Have a lot of great clients. You know, never know who's going to be calling up the office and needing them some assistance. So, like I said, it's all, every day is a new day, and I love what I'm doing.
I met Ira, and he was busy specking out a room and checking the exits and making sure everything was sorted out for these clients of his. And He was sitting down to breakfast, and I said to him, "Listen, you must have some amazing stories. I mean, you've got pictures of you with various presidents, you at all kinds of international conventions with really, really important people. You've probably met more famous and important people than any of us, right?"
It's you know, I look back on my career, and it's been a good run. You know, you don't think about what's going on while you're doing it. And then, you know, you sort of sit back a couple of years later and you go, "Wow, really? I've had a lot of interesting times and met a lot of great people and worked with a lot of great people." So, like I said, you know, the experience that I've had and the career has been great, and it's keep going.
So, Ira, do you think you need a specific kind of personality to deal with these high value clients, these tough situations, these very important people? What do you have to do in terms of have the right personality? Because I suppose it must be difficult to know how close you can get and how far you can get. Some of these people will give you, you know, complete access and then treat you as a friend, and other people will keep you at an arm's length. You have to sort of dance a little to make sure that you are doing the right thing and looking after them, but at the same time, not getting too familiar.
That's exactly correct. And what a lot of people that were in law enforcement and in the military, and then they try to come over and do this type of work, they have some sort of a misunderstanding of how this really works, and trying to keep that professional buffer zone, as I call it, between yourself and your client. And as you point out, Garrett, some clients are very friendly. They open up to you, which is great, but then you have to know when to step back. And a perfect example is that sometimes your client will turn to you and say, "Hey, listen, can you want to sit down? Let's have lunch together." And, you know, that might be a good opportunity that you're in a secure place and And, you know, you'll sit down and you'll have lunch and you'll have, you might have a small conversation, but you shouldn't think that tomorrow, the next day, you're going to be having dinner and lunch with them again.
Right.
And, you know, so that's, you know, something that you have to understand. Every day is a new day with your client. You know, just because what you did the day before doesn't mean that they expect that to happen again.
So, I mean, just give us a little indication of some of the people you've looked after and protected and have had to work with. I mean, the ones you can talk about. Former presidents.
I haven't worked direct. You know, the Secret Service are the ones that protect the presidents of the United States. Mm-hmm. But I have been in joint details with the Secretary of State and many presidents, Ronald Reagan and Bush 41 and 43 and the Clintons a lot, because James Baker traveled a lot. Sometimes with joint details with Bush and so you know that's when we met. Then I would be in the presence of the President of the United States. There were a couple of pictures where you'll see me, you'll see the Secretary of State, and you'll see the President, which is kind of interesting.
Wow!
And then also, you know, we work with all the royal family, British royal family, except for the Queen, who, if she came over, would be protected by the Secret Service. But, you know, everybody else, you know, Prince Charles, Princess Diana, Prince Philip, worked with all of them in the United States. Hmm. They came quite often to the United States. The Dalai Lama, Nelson Mandela. It's
pretty much
very interesting group of people.
You've hit on the most famous and important people in the world in one, you know, sentence of some of the people you worked with. Some of them obviously have big personalities. We know how friendly Bill Clinton is. He's very much the kind of guy who goes, "Oh, how are you doing?" And, you know, he'll ask you about your kids or your wife or whatever. These guys are very, very good at being friendly. But you also have to know that they're not going to be your friend the next day. You're there to do a job. They're there to do a job. But you must have seen some amazing things. I mean, working with the Department of State, you might have been privy to conversations between, you know, the Secretary of State and maybe a country that you could go to war with, a country that you could be making some kind of a treaty with, some of the most secret conversations that have been you know, put into the history books. You might have been in that room.
Yeah, I mean, diplomatic security agents are put in that position a lot. They do have a lot of up close and impersonal contact with the Secretary of State. And so, yeah, I've been in situations where I've heard some things that would say, "Wow, that was pretty important. What was just spoken?"
Wow.
Or, you know, and I did the Madrid Peace Conference. Back in when it was between Israel and its Middle East neighbors, and that was a very interesting time, and there was a lot of tension involved, I was directly doing security at hotels for the people that were participating, and Secretary of State was staying at one hotel, so you did get to hear a lot among all the people there involved in that conference.
What do you look for when you go into a room? And maybe this can help all of us, because people are not very observant, right? And people don't think of the worst case scenario. You're paid to think about the worst case scenario. You're paid to think, what if a fire breaks out? What if a gunman comes in? What if there's somebody who's planted a bomb somewhere? What if this wall falls down? You think about that stuff, and obviously that's your job, but the rest of us don't think about those things when we go into a room. What do you need to do without being paranoid to kind of case a place, to figure out what's going on? What do you look for?
I think the main trait of a good security person is situational awareness. And that is something that everybody should practice at all times. That only keeps them safer on the streets and wherever they go. So when I walk into a room, I'm immediately looking around to see who's there, what's going on, the groups, are there just couples or are there large groups gathering? Are people drinking? Mm. And then I start looking for doorways, how we're getting out, open windows, things of that nature that might send some red flags to me or also show me places where I might be going with my client in case there's an emergency. And then, of course, you have to find out where the bathroom is. That's one of the most important things, because you know, the client's always going to ask you, you know, I need to go to the bathroom. Where is it? And you're going to have to show them where it is.
Wow.
You know, some people say, well, it's not a security thing. Oh, no, that's a security thing. You really have figure out all the places where your client might want to go. And that's one of the primary spots where they usually asking where the directions to.
I've never thought about that, but that's so important, because they're obviously going to turn to you at some point and go, where's the bathroom? And you've got to know. So do you usually arrive beforehand at a place and check it out? Do you take note of the exits, find out where the bathroom is, make sure that there aren't any suspicious people lurking around? You do that, what, like a week before, a couple of days before?
When we're with the government and we have a big, obviously big protected detail, would it be the royal families or, like I said, Nelson Mandela or Dalai Lama? I mean, we would do that weeks in advance, and we would do full site surveys of the locations where they're going. And, you know, it's quite an extensive reports on the neighborhood and hospital closeness and police response. And so there's a lot that would go into that report, and very, very usual for a big event. And then when you start doing smaller events, usually it's a couple of days. If I had a couple of days to do each one, which it would be enough time. Like I do a lot of these conferences, and I'm usually there. I do a pre-advance, which could be months in advance, go for a couple of days to a location. You know, where I saw you at that location, we had done a pre-advance months before, knew all the buildings, knew everything that we needed to know. And then I got there a few days before, just to make sure everything was set up the way it was supposed to be set up. Usually we do what's called down and dirties, which is that, okay, your client tells you we're going to this location the morning that you meet them, and you just have to figure it out when you get there.
So how does it change when you're not dealing with a government person or a head of state or you know, the royal family or anything else, when you're dealing with someone who's just a very rich person? What kinds of things are your major threats there? I mean, if you go to South America, for example, you have to worry about kidnapping, right? You have to worry about like ransoms for those kinds of things. What are you looking out for with very rich people?
Well, you know, since we don't have the backing of the U.S. government and the local support, but being a former State Department agent, I do have some people that I can turn to at State Department that I get information of what's going on in the country at that time. And so I do a bit of a background assessment of where we're going and what's going on. What are some of the problems that the country is having? And so it's not as a large of a report that I usually do, but I still do some sort of background of where we're going, so I know what the problem areas could be. And you know, that's usually what we have when we do these smaller details. And then need be, we set up with a local vendor that has local support, whether we need drivers or we need armed security, we believe. Yeah. And so it's important to have those contacts also.
Wow. So it's good to have someone you can call in a tight situation to get someone taken out of a place and in a few minutes. You know, you need to be able to have backup plans for backup plans. Do you ever end up in a situation where you actually might have to take a bullet for somebody?
Well, I'm not going to say that people get trained to step in front of a bullet. That's not what happens. We're trained, you know, people that are trained in executive protection at a high level, that means with the government and the military, is that you're trained to react. And when something happens, you just go into your mode. And that's usually you're going toward the threat. And then, you know, the main thing with a security person is you're looking to get your client out of a dangerous situation. You're not looking to fight it out and shoot it out. You're looking to, you know, stop it where it is and then get your client out as quickly and safely as possible. So like I said, if I saw a gun, I most probably would not be jumping in front of that gun because I know the bullets are coming out. But I will be going toward the threat and trying to knock the gun out or push that person down, grab my client and get out of the area.
Wow. Have you been in situations like that before, or is that just part of your training and you're thankfully able to navigate past some of those, or have you been in pretty tough situations already?
I mean, I haven't had where people were shooting or that type of situation, but, you know, I have been during protests with clients and also in the government, where you're inside this huge crowd and you're constantly scanning the area and looking for people that might looking to cause you harm. And that does happen at some of these events where, you know, you just catch someone's eye and you go, you know, they're not right. You know, they're looking to do something bad. And you're mostly going to position your body so you can pull your client away from that area.
Do you think that either Simpiwe or Michael Flax here on the screen with us, do you think either of them look suspicious? If you saw them in a crowd, would you want to neutralize the threat from them immediately?
No, they look kind of friendly.
Okay. We're going for a hug.
Smiling faces are good. We in security, we always look at people's eyes. The eyes don't lie, we say. Hmm. You know, you see people twitching, you see them scanning back and forth. That throws a couple of suspicious elements at us, and we sort of start looking at the person.
Do you have any like cool gadgets, like signal jammers that you use in your day to day, or that you find extremely helpful in your line of work?
I don't use that. No, I mean, it's a pretty simplistic what we do. We do have assets that we can call if we need to, you know, sweep a client for listening devices, things of that nature. We do have obviously companies we can call to bring in for explosives and things of that nature.
And when you're protecting someone, do you request that it's your own team, people you know that will have your back, or do you have to adapt and like whatever team is thrown your way?
Well, it depends. We I like to work with people that I know. But then again, I'll work with whatever happens. Sometimes we'll go to a venue and we're a guest of that venue. So then I have to then liaison with the security from that venue. It could be concert security. It could be an event security person, could be conference security, could be hotel security. So you have to learn how to liaison and work with them, because they're going to be your support group while you get to this location. And you just can't tell them, no, I'm in charge, I'm running it. That, you know, it doesn't work that way, especially in the private sector, where you look to need the support from other venues where you're going.
I'm curious. Okay. Sorry, Simpiwe, go ahead. You got a question.
I'd like to know, do you, with your private life, do you still do the things that you do in your professional life? So when you enter a restaurant, do you check it out? Do you look out for like any suspicious people, or is it just kind of like a on and off switch for you?
No, it's always on. My family laughs about it all the time. There's scanning the room, you know, making sure he's in the right position. They can see everybody coming in. And, you know, I try to teach my kids that and my wife that, very important situational awareness, walking in the street, constantly know what's going on. You know, don't be looking down at your phone.
So that's a really interesting point. I mean, we live in a country that's quite dangerous. I mean, South Africa, there's a lot of crime and, you know, a lot of people are paranoid about it. But I think there's a safe kind of there's a good situational awareness where you're not having a horrible life and constantly worried that someone's trying to steal from you or kill you or whatever. And then there's also being awake, and some people are just not observant at all. What's the best seat in a restaurant, Ira? I mean, people always argue about which one's the best table, but what would you always take? You said just now the one where you can see who's coming in. You want your back against the wall, right? You want one or three sides where you are in control of everything. No one's going to surprise you from behind.
That's correct. Yeah. I mean, back against the wall, good view of people coming in the front door, And that's the for a security person, that's where you want to be. Sometimes you need to be by the bar, you know, because that's a good vantage point. You know, as long as when you're with a client, you want to just make sure that you have eye contact, you know. And, you know, when you're doing security like this, usually, you know, with the government, there is always an agent in close proximity to our protectee. But, you know, in the private sector, that's not always the case, especially, you know, I do a lot of work in Manhattan. I go to restaurants, you know, usually the tables are pretty full. So you don't have that opportunity to be next to your client. So you try to pick an optimal place. Usually it's, you know, nearby. It could be a table nearby. It could be the bar. As long as you have eye contact with your client at all times, that's usually a pretty good spot to be.
Ira, you mentioned earlier that some of the clients, you know, you don't want to get too friendly with them, but sometimes they might ask you to do things that are not really within your job description. I mean, you're probably going to have clients who don't know how to, you know, maintain their distance either. So they'll say to you, oh, do you mind fetching my laundry or any of that stuff? So do you also set up a bunch of rules for yourself that you're not going to get involved? For example, if they say to you, oh, I'm just going to go and meet my mistress down the road here. Or is that none of your business?
It is and it isn't, you know, because obviously you don't want to be put into a bad situation where you have to testify in court in a divorce settlement. And, you know, you do see things. Yeah. I've had clients where, you know, they might be meeting with people they shouldn't be meeting and getting a little friendly. But, you know, you have to be discreet, and that's part of the job also. That's their life, as long as they're, you know, still keeping themselves in a safe situation, at least when I'm with them, that's fine with me.
Yeah. Have you had clients who are really just terrible, and you don't have to mention names, but people who over the 25 years you've been involved in this have just been absolute nightmares, and you just don't want to work with them again if you can help it?
Very, very few, but yes. Very few, but some, you know, it the whole thing is, you give respect, you expect some respect back. You know, right. Listen, sometimes they treat you like you work for them. And, you know, that's not technically, it's true to a point, but not really. You know, my big thing is that if I say good morning to you, I expect you to say good morning back.
Right.
If I say good to you, say good night back. That's a good day. Then you've had good conversation with your client. If you get a thank you at the end, that's even better, you know.
I love it.
That happens maybe, you know, 80%, 85% of the time, which is good. But then there's just some people that just think they're above you. And, you know, they don't need to have any conversation with you, and you're beneath them. Very few people like that.
That's not
so. Have you ever worked in, like, really remote places where, like, even communication is a problem and getting, like, equipment in is a problem, like, really remote jungles or Guatemala or somewhere?
I mean, right now with cell phone, you know, when I started in 1987, we didn't have cell phones, you know, so it was very hard to have communication contact, you know, with your group or with support. And, you know, we're in the Congo, in refugee camps in Rwanda, and traveling to high mountain areas where you don't have that communication anymore. Right now, obviously, it's a lot better situation throughout the world where there's cell towers around. But, you know, in the early days of starting out, you didn't think about it because you just knew you weren't going to be able to communicate. And you know, so it was the situation that really put you into bad spots. But like I said, you know, we look back at that and go, that was a bad situation, huh? Because communication was just terrible. But being in, you know, in Africa, and I traveled a lot throughout Africa, and I went to, unfortunately, a lot of war-torn countries and refugee camps. And, you know, so it was, you know, you see a lot and people, you know, there wasn't a lot of things set up to not, wouldn't say for comfort, but even just basic things in life that we take for granted now.
So what age did you get into this?
What was that?
What age did you get into this?
Oh, 26.
Wow.
I was a school teacher before.
School teacher.
I graduated from college with a degree in teaching and needed a job and got offered a job. And I taught elementary school for 3 years before I joined the government.
Ira, I don't want to let you go without asking you this, because for most of us, airports are a nightmare, especially when it comes to long queues, you know, having to wait, having to go through passport control, all of that stuff. Are there any tips that you've learned, and especially during your time when you were working at the Department of Homeland Security with the Federal Air Marshal, Are there any tips that you have for airports and for just making it a little bit less unpleasant?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a big proponent on getting to airports early. I hate rushing to get to a flight.
Right.
So, and I always try to pick flights that are early in the morning. Usually those used to be good times where there weren't large crowds, but then all of a sudden COVID hit, and now, you know, they have problems filling slots for people to work to work the magnetometers and everything.
Yeah.
So now the early morning times are not good. So it's always a toss up of what's going to happen at the airports now. But I always try to make sure that I go through my bags and make sure everything is in place, so I know I can just put my bag through. You know, we're lucky in the United States that we have a couple of different things that help us out getting through airports quickly, which is, TSA has a program where you sign up, and so you get to go through. You don't have to take off your shoes or your belt. And then there's the company called Clear that I'm also a member of. So that helps get people through the airport a little quicker if you belong to those groups or you went through that process.
That's amazing.
I highly recommend it if you can.
Yeah, that's handy to know. I'm also the other thing I've got to ask you is that obviously crowds of people are a problem. But if we were in a zombie apocalypse, where do you think the best place is to go to? Where would you if you had a client and suddenly all kinds of shit rained down and the place just blew up and everything was a disaster? Where would you think is the safest place to go? Where would you head to make sure that you and your clients were safe?
Most probably, I'm definitely out of metropolitan areas. I always look to see, where would I move my family to? And it would definitely be outside within a 50-mile area radius of a metropolitan area. Usually you want to stay a little close because the support there, you know, communication, cell towers and everything would be still in setup. So you might be able to use that. But
right.
Also you want to be remote enough in an area where, you know, you can basically set up your own little area and zone and keep yourself safe and watch people coming into where you are.
Is there
nice
anything
cabin in the woods would be good?
Oh, absolutely. Is there anything that you do not travel without? Are there some things that you always take with you?
That's a good question. Obviously enough, you know, backup of electronic wiring and everything for my computers and my phones are very important. You know, a couple of different, I always bring a couple of different pairs of shoes. Because if I'm gone for a long time, constantly changing out, my shoes, very important to keep your feet feeling good.
Right.
Especially after long days, you know,
mm-hmm.
We easily can work 15 to 17 hour days, 4 or 5 days in a row.
Wow.
Jeez.
That's impressive. All right, Simpiwe Flax, you've got like a couple of seconds with Ira, and then we got to let him go and call it quits on the show for this morning. What do you got?
I need to know, what made you decide to get into this career? Like, I know when you got into it, but why?
When you're young, you sort of look for things that are going to be exciting in life. Like I said, never thought that I would have, you know, the type of career that I had or traveled to all the countries that I've been to and met all these people. You don't think about that when you choose a career. I tell young people this all the time. Doors open up and sometimes you just have to step through and see what it brings you. When I was teaching school, I knew I didn't want to be a teacher for the rest of my life. Not that I didn't like it. I loved it and I was quite successful at it, but I didn't feel that was what I wanted. Wanted to get into some sort of law enforcement, possibly. So it just so happens in 1986, unfortunately, we had a lot of bombings at embassies overseas, and the Bureau of Diplomatic Security, was called the Diplomatic Security Service at the time, was expanding because Congress was giving it a lot of money to expand the security at embassies, which is part of a security agent's job in their career. You know, they put an ad out and I answered it and the rest is history.
It's phenomenal.
Oh, wow. Well, earlier you mentioned that, like, if your clients greet you back, that's a good day. But for you, what constitutes like a great day where you like, you know what, today was phenomenal. Like, I want to have a day like this again. What does that look like for you?
You know, when you've had a really busy day, you have a lot of events, or you've had one huge event and everything went well. And, you know, nothing's perfect, but, you know, there will be bumps in the road. So at the end of the day, you can look back and go, wow, you know, we everyone's safe. We did a great job with little resources, because when you're in this type of business now in the private sector, you don't have a lot of resources. So if you can do a lot with little, it's a great day. And like I said, if the client at the end says, wow, you were fantastic, and thank you so much, couldn't have done it without you, even better.
Ira, it's amazing to talk to you, and I just wish we could talk to you for days and days, because we wouldn't run out of things to ask you, and it sounds like you have experiences that you're just scratching the surface of right now. Your company sounds amazing. How many people work for you, and where do you guys deploy? All over the world? I mean, are there people who've used you in far corners of the globe?
When I left the government, I had my own business, and basically I was a one-man show. Mm-hmm. Like I said, I didn't know who I was, you know, what I was going to do, who I was going to meet. And then all of a sudden I started getting some calls from people that knew I was retired from the government and started doing some small jobs for them. And then other people found out. And then about 4 years ago, the company that I work for now, T&M, USA based in Manhattan, they brought me on to work exclusively with their clients. Wow. And so basically, I work for them. They have a great network of clients. All different types, celebrities and high net worth and you know, Fortune 500 companies and major media networks. So they have a lot of clients that I can be assigned to, which is great. And you know, so it's always good. You know, the networking in this business is the hardest thing. Yeah. And I find that, you know, I'd love to do the work, but the networking really takes time and it's not an easy thing. So if you have someone that could feed you work, it's really great, because then you can concentrate on your job.
One last thing. I can't let you go without asking this. So you must have been to some pretty top secret locations. You must have been to a few places in the world that the rest of us are not even allowed to know exists. Are there any of those that you can tell us about? Is there some place that you think, wow, I can't believe I actually would, I was allowed into that place?
Well, I've been to... you know, some nuclear locations where we were doing some tours, and then you know, I went through some war zone areas where unfortunately you see some mass killings and mass graves, and you know, those were sad parts. But you know, it's just going to events that are pretty special to me sometimes. And
have you been in those rooms, those operations rooms under the White House?
I've taken tours throughout the White House, yes, and we have in the embassies we have our own situation rooms,
right?
We're actually where we meet all the time. So yeah, we've had those places all the time, and it's pretty interesting.
Amazing, Ira. Cool. Thank you so much. I know it's very late at night over there at the moment, so I really appreciate you staying up and talking to us. And I hope you have an excellent week. And we appreciate your time. Great to talk to you. Yeah.
Thank you very much. Enjoyed my time with you guys. Have
Amazing.
A great day.
And you, Ira. Thank you so much. Ira Shinsky, who is he's the guy. I mean, there's nothing that he couldn't answer,
he's
right?
Cool.
What an awesome human Ooh. Being. What an incredible
really
life.
Cool. Oh, I'd love to just live life through his eyes just for a couple days.
The things he's seen, the people he's met, the places he's been. This guy has lived a life. It's an unbelievable story. Ira Shinsky, I'm very glad that I met him and talked him into coming onto the show. Because, you know, a lot of these guys, they actually don't want to talk about what they do. And it's fascinating.
It was very open. It was
we would all want to sit down with them and talk for hours and hours. But some of them, you can see they've done some things. They've seen some things. They've worked with some people. They can't really talk about some of that stuff. I appreciate Ira doing it with us this morning. All right, everybody. Have a happy day. We will see you tomorrow morning at 6 a.m. bright and early. Flax, thanks for joining us today. And
thanks for having me.
We'll catch up tomorrow. Cheers, everybody. Bye. CliffCentral.com.